Episode 200. Big shout out to any veterans that are listening to this show. Happy Veterans Day to you. It's November the 11th. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. This is the 200th episode, which is crazy to believe. There's been 200 episodes, roughly 200 hours of content for the podcast. Some exciting news. A past sponsor is back on board as a sponsor of this podcast. So Pain Outside the Box, welcome back to the show. And thank you so much for contributing to the success of this podcast and contributing to more and more listeners hearing it around the world. Genuinely appreciate the support. So Pain Outside the Box, Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, she was actually a podcast guest a while back, and she's going to be back on the show here coming up. But Pain Outside the Box is a coaching and educational venture on TMS and neuroplastic pain. Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, one of my favorite names, the founder, is a coach and a mind-body practitioner who offers personalized one-on-one coaching as well as self-paced virtual programs designed to get people out of chronic pain. Her latest program, called Pain-Free Breakthrough, is a transformational training consisting of videos, readings, meditations, and other tools aimed at chronic pain recovery. The program will get you to implement TMS knowledge into practice and includes an editable workbook where you'll be able to journal, track your progress, and do the inner work necessary. So to learn more, check out her website at painoutsidethebox, all one word, .com. Again, that's painoutsidethebox.com. Thank you, Miriam. This episode also brought to you by the patrons of the podcast. I'm not going to go on and read everybody's name because I'm going to do that next week, because one of the most important things about this is that the longest running active patron, Barb Mastriani, is the guest today. She's been supporting the podcast monetarily since November 16th, 2018, every single month. And if you go to patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast, you can learn more about that. But, thank you so much to Barb. Barb's been on another TMS podcast before, and she's been a great advocate. I've kind of watched her story over the last 3 or 4 years or so, as she's appeared on different forums, and I've seen different stories that she's given, the progress that she's made, how her life has changed, and that's what this podcast is all about today. So without further ado, here's Barb and I. Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and today's a very special episode. Not just because it is the 200th episode of the podcast, but it's just one of those things, the way the universe worked out. But a longtime listener, an advocate for the TMS community, Barb Mastriani from New Jersey, is on the line with me. Barb, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
So not only have you been around this landscape for quite some time, you are also the longest running patron supporter of the podcast. So thank you so much for 3 years, almost 3 years. I think by the time this airs, it'll be 3 years. But thank you so much for continuing to support the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And congratulations on 200. That's a big milestone. I've been here for every single podcast.
Wow, that is crazy. is really crazy to think about that. So you've been on a podcast before. You were on Nicole's podcast a year or two ago. Is that right?
Yeah, a couple summers ago, I think. Yes, I was on with Nicole.
There's probably a lot of people that are listening to this that have seen your name or maybe seen things that you've written in the past, but I'm going to bet that the majority of them have no idea who you are. So the goal by the end of this conversation, whether it goes 45 minutes or however long, we want to know about Barb. We want to know about Barb's story, things that you've learned, kind of the challenges that you had along the way. But ultimately, one of the things that I want to start with is, I guess, like, we're going to Tarantino this a little bit. So, mm-hmm. which I always say, and it's such a lame line, but it always makes sense to whomever it is that's listening. What is different about you and the way that you think about things, from a pain perspective, but also just, you know, general daily wellness perspective now, that was different than it was, say, 5 or 6 years ago?
Oh, wow. that's a great question. So, because there's so much, mm-hmm. right? The way I am now versus before. So I have so much more understanding that came from knowledge and experience that it's just it's opened up so much for me. And really, you know, like just like anything, when you take on something new in your life, or you get involved in something new, or you're like, even your kid, you know, they start to play hockey, and then all of a sudden, you know, you just learn so much, and there's so many avenues to go down. So I think that my life is different, and like, just so grateful that I found this, right? Because I can just have so much more understanding when I face something. I'm trying to like sort of summarize it for you, but I don't know if I'm doing a good job, but so much more understanding because of the knowledge that I have and continue to like learn. There's so many layers and it's so deep, but it's like, and that's the, where I've gotten to, like sort of a peaceful, there's an onion here, but that's okay. Because there's just so much more to learn and grow. And I feel like I'm on the right path now.
Is there maybe an example, and a hypothetical example is perfectly fine, but let's say that you faced a very difficult situation today, could be in life, career, love, relationships, whatever the case is, and how you would, I guess, handle, tackle, or address that particular issue now versus maybe several years ago.
I don't even know if this is what you're looking for, but this is what just came to my mind. And I wanted to cover this with you.
Yeah.
So I'm an avid bike rider. Like, I try not to get in my car where I live. I live at the beach and I just try to use my bike all the time. And my husband rides with me. And I recently had like my first bike accident, and I fell off my bike and I broke my arm. But
oh, wow.
It leads up to that. But, you know, I was like scraped up both knees and, you know, road rash and broke my arm. And and to be honest with you, it was so interesting, like the way I dealt with that and reacted to it, because of the way I understand my body now. I just when I found out my arm broke, because I didn't find out for about 5 days, I just thought, you know, I hurt it and I would rest, and then I'm like, let me go get an x-ray and just make sure. So, because I treat it differently, right? If it wasn't really broken, I would probably push it. But yeah, Now that I knew it was broken, I had a different thought process. But why TMS changed all that was like, it was just a broken arm. Like, your body heals from anything.
Yep.
And I had no stress. I just watched the process almost with curiosity about how you heal from a broken bone. And it's so different, right, than the way you heal from TMS pain for me, that it was really interesting to contrast TMS pain with a broken arm. That was really enlightening to me recently.
It's a part of the toolkit now, like meaning that for you, even though, you know, there are omissions out of the TMS, TMS checklist, I guess, from Sarno, that, you know, broken bone, tumor, cancer, not to say that those are, you know, off the hook. That's not what I'm trying to say, but that they, you know, that that's not an application or not a place that he had said to address it differently, of course. But what you're saying, and I understand what you mean, because I went through this a year and a half ago with my ankle. But you're saying like, you can still use this kind of knowledge as an application for, even if it is a broken bone or something along those lines, correct?
Oh yeah. Like that's exactly what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I broke my bone, and that's not TMS, right? Broke my arm. But I was so content and I was fine with it, right? Because I knew my body was going to take care of it in the time frame that it needed to. And that it would, and that I would have no lasting effects, right? It would go back, you know, my arm would be fine. And, you know, it almost followed the pattern, right? And in 8 weeks, where I have to be honest with you, Eddie, I swear if it happened 10 years ago, I would have been pissed. I would have been like, wait, you know, I would have been upset that I wasn't getting to go to the gym, and yep, I was never going to get my muscles back. And, you know, I just would have had such a totally different reaction. Than before I understood TMS.
You'd have been freaking out, basically.
Yeah, I would have.
I dislocated my fibula last year, and it is very much I've talked about this before. One of the phrases that I've hated forever when people say it is what it is. And it always drives mm-hmm. me nuts. I was in a job interview for a radio station back in 2008. And the program director, they made an offer not the job that I wanted, but they made an offer. And I was kind of arguing about, you know, this other one is really the one that I think is a better fit and the one that I want. And the phrase that he would use back is, it is what it is. And for years, I would use that very flippant response, joking around with like my wife about any sort of situation, how much I like it. But now I find myself applying that to injuries, pain, anything really in that space, because like a broken bone is a broken bone, right? Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And when I had had my skateboarding accident, I was upset at myself for doing it, just in the sense of like, gosh, I went for one more round out in the rain. What are you thinking? Like, you,
but yeah, that last ski run.
Yeah, right. But but I was not freaking out thinking this is the end of my athletic pursuits and all this, or it's going to put me so many weeks behind all my training and all that. It was just kind of like, well, there's not a lot I can do with it. So my pain did not last very long at all. What's the word I'm looking for? Mechanically, it was not really, I was not functioning as well as I could, but I didn't hurt. And to me, that's very, you know, that's like interpretation of pain, I think, is really the I think it's the beginning, middle, and end of a lot of this stuff. And when I went to go see somebody and they pointed out that my fibula was in fact dislodged, and when they did slide it back into place, my swelling went down. You could see it in that moment, actually starting to, you know, the swelling was dissolving, and I was back training as I was prior after a couple of weeks. And, you know, it just kind of is. But if I were to look back 5 years ago, the response would have been astronomically different, like you described.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I don't know that I healed faster. I mean, it's a broken bone. It took 6 weeks, like just exactly what the doctor said. Right. But I definitely, the pain too, the pain was nothing like I had with TMS. Like it just wasn't, it was, you know, it hurt. Right. And I put ice on it and whatever, but it actually didn't compare to the pain I've had in my back and hips from TMS.
Yeah. Well, that is a great segue. So, we can sort of choose where we want to go with this, because on one hand, to me, there is a, you know, looking back now, I could say, Barb, tell me how far back it is that you had symptoms. And you could probably tell me times when you were 10 or 12 or 15 or maybe even younger of something. But there had to have come a time where the symptoms got so big that you couldn't ignore them anymore. And that's really what I want to understand is, when was that? Because that's going to kind of be the crux of the rest of the conversation. So approximately what year or time frame would we be talking about where it was like, it's no more tapping you on the shoulder, it is punching you in the face, Barb, listen to me. What happened and when was it?
Right. So it was 2017 when I went down the whole medical path of, you know, my back, it started in my back, you know, and then it went to sciatica. Then it went to my feet. And so it was 2017 that I went through, you know, I always tell when I help people now, or I talk to people about their pain, and yeah, I feel like every story is the same. Like you get to be like, oh God, another, you know, like, because it's the same, you think it's your back, and then you go for all these tests and they tell you this and they tell you that, and then it spreads and, you know, you think you have something worse. And so it was all of 2017 to answer your question. Started in my back, and then I had sciatica, and then the sciatica went to my other hip, and but I went through all the, you know, the MRIs and the, you know, just trying to do every single thing I could. No one ever said to go to surgery, though. I never got that far. I was just, but of course no one could ever explain how I could be that much in pain with, you know, and they were finding things as the normal abnormalities, you know, like all the words say, but nothing, no one ever told me to go have surgery, which was good, but still, I mean, I would have rather they told me to have surgery at that point, right, when you're in terrible pain. But so, yeah, it was all of 2017. And then I found, you know, I'm a Howard Stern fan, and, you know, found the book, and really, you know, even the same boring process from there, found Nicole, started listening. And then I did want to say this, though, like in the story, Eddie, because that's why I'm so happy to be here. But I'm like a gym person, like, you know, not like weightlifting like you do. But I worked at a gym when I was 19 through college, and turned, you know, got turned on to just, you know, being, I guess, a gym rat. And it's just I work out every morning. Really important to me. And I had to stop that, right? I went on disability from work. I thought I'd never work out again. And really, your story, which was like right behind mine, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, you were like right ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And you were going back to the gym. And I'm like, I'm going back to the gym. And I honestly really, you know, like, you know, it was you. Maybe something else would have done it. But it was like, yeah, I'm going to go back to the gym, you know. And there were times where I actually cried through my workout, but I had the like sort of confidence to do it. And it was you. Like I was listening to your podcast every week and listening to, you know, you being just ahead of me in this whole process and, you know, being grateful that you were making me stay in that gym because that's how I got through it. Right. That's how I got to where I am, which is, you know, on the other side.
Well, I love hearing that. That's definitely the most gratification is that kind of stuff. Cause it is unique space. Like there's a lot of voices that are in this, but the niche that I try to, you know, with sometimes with a chisel and a hammer at some point, some points in time is I think there is an enormous number of people that are out there that are athletes or they have athletic pursuits and it could be completely recreational. I'm not talking about Tiger Woods or Peyton Manning or Jake Locker or some of these other people that keep sustaining repeated injuries. But more so just, you know, the people that want to go bike riding, the people that want to do a marathon, or the people that want to compete in a weightlifting competition or a CrossFit competition or something like that, that they sort of have these years of being very active and then something happens. Could be an injury. It could just be they woke up one day and they started having pain. And then I think that the activity levels diminish and then they diminish and then they diminish. Yeah. And then you sort of, Schubiner talked about this when I interviewed him, is that really it's kind of a mechanism of, do I have your attention now? And when he'd asked mm-hmm. me like, when all this was happening to me, what were the hobbies that I couldn't partake in? And I had said weightlifting and motorcycle riding. And his exact response in the podcast was, well, did it have your attention? And yeah, cause I couldn't do those things.
Exactly.
So there's just an enormous number of people that are out there just like you and me that want to do physical things and then feel like we can't anymore. And you're right. Timing wise, for me, that period of time where it was no longer tapping on the shoulder, but rather punching in the face was like end of August of 2016, maybe early September. So it was just a few months ahead of you. Were there any kind of like prevailing diagnoses that you were given? What, even if it was something like a tendonitis or something, was there anything that kind of you would hear as a consistent, here's what we think is going on?
Well, I have two things. One is the diagnosis in my back was spondylolisthesis, which okay. is, you know, why I love Nicole.
And, yeah.
It's the same thing. But my spondylolisthesis, even when I, you know, started down this path, was caused by I was born with hip dysplasia. So one of my hips, like the ball, like that fits into your socket, right? It's flat and not round. That's what I mean, that they called it hip dysplasia. I don't know if it has another technical name, but anyway, I lived with that my whole life without pain. And I always say this, like until I was, you know, 50, whatever, when all this happened, 54, 53, whatever, but like no pain all the way up till then. And then the doctor's going to tell me that that's what's causing my pain.
Yep.
Like it didn't, you know, at first, now I believed them, right? When they started saying that, like, oh, you're off balance, you know, you have imbalances and now you have your spondylolisthesis is getting affected because, you know, your hips are out of line. And I was believing all that, but it didn't, like, when you really think logically, like, why then? Like, what made that just happen? Like, this is why this all makes sense to me. Like, why then? Well, why then was because I had a lot of stuff going on in my life, you know, a divorce and two kids that were getting remarried. And I had to face my divorce for the first time, really.
Yep.
You know, just all of it was happening at the same time. And it was like, oh, no. It's not that all of a sudden you turn one age and, you know, something you had your whole life is going to cause pain. It's all these other things doing it, right?
One of the really obnoxious things is that phrase, the straw that broke the camel's back, right? Because in your yeah. situation, I mean, that might very well be something that a physical therapist or a chiropractor or a medical doctor may say to you. You were born with this thing and you went a very long amount of time without having any sort of a issue that was continuous. And now, you know, it's all this time of your hips being out of alignment and walking this certain way that ultimately has now caused your problem, which really... I mean, that sucks, right? Because you have yeah. this visual in your head of, so, like if I say to you that your hips are off center, I would imagine, and you didn't know anything about any of the TMS stuff or the human body or anything like that, and that was just the first thing that you heard, that visual that is in your head, I would imagine, is going to be somewhat like, I would think of probably like a teeter-totter. And, you know, that's the body moving in a way that it, quote, should not. So, yeah, I totally get that. So we're in 2017. How did you, somebody hand you a Sarno book, or were you searching the internet? Like, how did you get from the doctor's office to sitting on the couch reading a book or listening to a podcast?
Well, so I go on disability from work, which was so now I'm like adding straws to the camel's back, because going on disability from work was, it was so devastating to me. I felt so bad. I'm the type of person that I don't know that I've ever taken a sick day, you know, colds, who cares, yeah. Right? Like, it just never. And then to call my boss and tell him that I couldn't come in because my back hurt, you know, like so bad. My anxiety was like through the roof. So now I'm like on my floor in the living room. I couldn't do anything. I was, you know, sleeping there. I was crying there. And I started, you know, the YouTube I'm looking for physical things, right? I'm looking like, you know, what stretch is somebody going to tell me to do to help my back? And when I was doing that, I don't know. I don't really remember which YouTube, but it may have even been Nicole, to be honest with you. She put those like really early YouTubes out where she gave the visual of the beach ball under the water. And she mentioned Sarno, and I do like this story. It'll take only a second, but I'll tell it to you. So I was like, Sarno, why do I think I remember that? And I go, oh, Howard Stern, like he talked about Sarno. But what is connection? I didn't even have to buy the book, because the connection was that my ex-husband had back pain his whole life. And I bought him the Sarno book when Howard Stern talked about it. I went out and bought it for him. And he never read it. He just, you know, he just never was open to it. And I didn't know anything about it. I didn't read it. I didn't need it. I didn't have back pain. So I had the book like packed away, because I had gotten divorced since and lived in a new house, and I had the book packed away. So I went up to my attic and I like said, oh, here's the book. You know, it was like 15 years old. I said, oh, I saved this book all these years. Let me read it. And then that started the whole thing. But unlike you, I didn't... I saw myself on the pages. I get it. You know, I'm a perfectionist. I fit that kind of model.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like, oh, this is going to be the, you know, like, I don't know. It was a chapter of time. I got it. I kind of could see maybe, you know, but it took me a while. Dr. Watts, who lives in New Jersey, he's a TMS doctor, and I went to him and I went to his seminar, but it took me. And then I started psychotherapy with Margaret Chan, who I know you've interviewed. And so it took me time. Like there was nothing like a book cure. There was nothing where everything turned around for me in a second. It took a lot of time. I worked with Steve Ozanich also. And it took me like 6 months, I would say, where my pain was reduced enough where I was like, yeah, this, I could see this. Like, there's definitely a connection here, because why would my pain be reducing if all I'm doing is this TMS work? But I didn't, you know, so I wasn't the type, you know, I know you were different and there are people that are different. I didn't just like all of a sudden believe this. It took me time and evidence to get there.
So Barb, the phone cut out a second ago, but you had said Dr. Gwads, is that who you saw in New Jersey?
Yeah, Dr. Gwads. I found him on the TMS Wiki. And he was great. He's very traditional Sarno. You go to a seminar that he does, exactly like Sarno did. And then he sent me to, after a few weeks when I wasn't sort of connecting after that, he sent me to Margaret Chan, who I know you've also interviewed. She's great. I saw her for 2 years, but only because psychotherapy, I loved it. Like, you know, it wasn't necessarily just TMS for me after a while. It was more like just discovering myself. And, you know, I just loved psychotherapy. So I continued with her. What I'm going to say is like, it wasn't an overnight thing for me. It took me like 6 months or so to really believe and like really have enough pain reduction that this was like, that I could see that I believed, right? That I believed in the mind-body connection, and that pain could be coming from my mind and all the, you know, all of the things I had to deal with in my life. But I wasn't, you know, there are some people like me, and then there's some people that, you know, get there a lot faster. But for me, it wasn't fast, but I got there.
And, you know, it like we said, it just, you know, I'm kind of glad it took long. It changed my life in ways that, you know, I stick to because it took time to change my patterns.
Yeah. Do you, would you consider yourself, when you went in to see Dr. Gwaz, did you consider yourself as somebody that was skeptical, or do you think that you were pretty accepting of the concepts? And I mean, how would you have rated yourself, or I guess classified yourself before going in to see him?
Yeah, I was, I saw that there could be something to this. Mm-hmm. And I was skeptical because I actually asked him, I'm like, how do you know this works? Why can't I talk? I was like calling him out on it. I'm like, why don't you have patients that are already better at your seminars? I was like kind of challenging him. And he's like, well, people are busy, you know? And then once they get out of pain, they don't want to like come back and talk. I go, well, when I'm out of pain, I'm coming back to talk. And of course I never did. So, but no, I would say skeptical, sure. But also just, yeah, it took me a while to really believe and see it. Definitely skeptical. But you know what? What I want to say though is, what was my thing was, I had no other hope. It was like I was hanging on to TMS not because I believed it, but because I felt like it was the last thing I could possibly do.
Yeah.
Like there was no other hope. So that's not really belief. Like, so that's why it took me even longer, right? It wasn't. You can't believe in TMS just because it's your last resort,
right?
Right. This has to be real.
Absolutely. What were some things that, and I guess maybe describe the seminar a little bit. There's a really great video on YouTube. One of these days I'm going to remember to actually post it, but, somebody, I think it's still there, but somebody had posted that Sarno put out a VHS in the 1990s. And it's very 90s, the hairstyles, the clothing, the everything.
I bought that DVD.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. So it is one of Sarno's lectures. It's a bunch of actors that are in the stand. So it's not a recorded actual lecture that he did, but it's designed to be exactly that. What certain things maybe that you can remember 4 years later that jumped out at you that he said in his, when you went to the seminar, were there certain things that still stick with you, maybe phrases or things that he pointed out that still resonate with you, like specifically or sit with you all these years later?
Well, I'm kind of a, I know that the whole TMS and now PPD, you know, community is going in a direction that I think is great, right? Because it can become more mainstream. But I'm kind of a Sarno traditionalist. That's why I asked you to do the Eddie, you know, the Sarno reminders, because I connected with that seminar just because of its sort of simplicity. Mm-hmm. It was just the very traditional Sarno, like, you know, like you could almost see him in his white coat being like very gruff and just telling it like it is. This is what it is. And, you know, I'm not like Gwaz wasn't there to just convince you. Like he wanted you to use your own, you know, sort of belief and knowledge and understanding and reading to come to your own conclusion.
Yep.
He was just there to present the facts. And that's all he really was meant to do. And then after that, he just became sort of an encouragement for me. But it really is left up to you, right? You just get the knowledge and then it's sort of in your hands where you take it. That's what stuck out to me.
What was the vibe of the people that were in the room? Like how many people attended? Was there a certain, because Sarno had talked about a lot, the age of responsibility. He put it as 30 to 60. My issues got really bad just within a couple months of turning 30. So I certainly fit into that as far as age demographic, but you and I we're not only a couple of years apart, we're quite a few years apart. So what was kind of the makeup of the people that were in the room then?
It honestly varied. Like I remember a couple of young people, or not even a couple, like I would say, first of all, the room was packed. It was in his waiting room. It was packed. It was basically standing room only. Of course, some people stand because you could bring your spouse. So you and a spouse were invited. And, or, you know, you and a significant other were invited and it was packed and it was hot and a lot of people were standing, but I think that was the people that were in pain. But there was probably a really good balance of, you know, like 10, you know, 30 somethings or less. You know, I saw like a couple of kids that I thought I didn't know whether they were there with their parents, but like in the 20s,
yeah,
you know, like, so I'm like, wow. And then there was the whole spectrum, because there was a few, you know, people older than me there. But the really interesting thing is there were people from not from the United States there.
Oh, wow.
Like, they literally flew in. There was two people. One was from India and one was from the UK. And they literally flew in for this, you know, talk about like nowadays with COVID, it would, you know, it's probably only online is the, yeah. you know, only the only way he does it. But the, there were two people that flew in to meet with him that day and then attend a seminar. And you went, it was like two nights. It was like a Tuesday night in for 2 weeks. And it was like 2 hours each time. And he literally used the, I think, the PowerPoints from that DVD. Like, it was the same Sarno PowerPoints.
That's wild. I've been told that, so I've done the flight from, the multiple flights, but Seattle to Sydney, Australia, that was while we did Seattle to LA to Sydney. And I think total time in the air was somewhere around 16 or 17 hours. But I've been told that the flight to and from India is actually technically the furthest, at least from Seattle, the furthest place that you could fly, like the longest flight that you could, because if you were going to Japan or one of the spots on the far eastern side of Asia, you would be going west to go into it. But India, I guess, right. is the last spot where from Seattle you would be heading east. So you're traveling 80% of the globe on a plane in order to get there. So, I mean, it's still plenty far from New Jersey, but that's wild. So when he's doing the seminar, when, like, you know, and this is speaking sort of generally maybe for doctors that are in this space, are they basically saying you should go and seek psychotherapy regardless, or is it talk about that, because I love Dr. Chan. In fact, she's I find myself reverting back to what several psychotherapists have said on this podcast over the last 4 years, but I find myself talking specifically about Dr. Chan with enough frequency that I'm curious on how you eventually got to go and see her. What led you to that?
Yeah, the seminar definitely didn't lead me to the psychotherapy. I mean, he basically used the same sort of ratio that he doesn't, you know, he didn't believe when he was, the seminar didn't say that you actually had to have psychotherapy unless unless you had underlying, you know, trauma and you really wanted to get at that, but that it was perfectly, you know, you're perfectly capable of, you know, doing most of Guatz was very just traditional. I mean, he had me write down on index cards. He had me write down prompts of things that could be, you know, sort of bothering me emotionally.
Yep.
And he had you carry around that card and referring to it, especially, you know, if you had sort of like an uptick in pain or you felt pain, right? But his thing was all cards and just referring to emotional events and really, you know, sitting down and then sitting and then taking like 20 minutes a day to just sit down and review them over and over and over in your head. That was his. And when I kept going back to him week after week, and, you know, he just felt like I could get maybe a little deeper because I wasn't feeling like any relief of the pain. That's when he referred me to Margaret Chan. And she was, you know, she was so good. There's so much more you could go into with her. Like, she's really, I'd probably be inappropriate if I tell you some of the ways she approaches this, but like, but she takes a very, like, if you want to, like, she goes down very, like, just real human ways of, like, giving you analogies of, you know, pain and things. I don't know. I'm probably, I shouldn't be this vague, but she's just great.
Well, so
you're
gonna
have to have her on again.
Yeah. So I think I know what you're saying. So when her and I finished up recording, this was in, if you're curious on what Barb's talking about, if you go to the end of 2018, I had interviewed Dr. Chan, and when we hung up, well, so during the interview, she used an analogy from Breaking Bad, which was perfect because it's my favorite show ever. And if you're listening to this and you've never seen the show, it's about a retired teacher who gets into making crystal meth. And so that inherently is not something you'd ever expect a psychotherapist to talk about. But when we hung up, she had talked about doing a part two at some point that was basically entirely around sex.
Where I was going.
Yeah. Which is not another thing that you wouldn't think plays into the equation. But, you know, so a few of the other things that she said that for her or to her, the soothe the rage ratio was one of the biggest parts of the equation. And it's so simple and it's right there in Sarno's literature. So there were just a lot of things. And she had the very same tone to me that like a Sarno had, where it's like, this is the information. This is what is. And there's no two ways about it. You know, there was no unsure – language that was in there. If you're comfortable sharing, I'm curious about, you know, some of the things maybe that in working with a psychotherapist on this kind of stuff, what sort of things did you learn about you? If you're comfortable telling, or if you have a couple of examples, because I'm just, you know, I think people in general are sort of hesitant about seeking psychotherapy for a variety of reasons. Some of them could be like cost prohibitive, of course, but just, you know, general skepticism of psychotherapy, or even just, hey, I don't think it's going to be for me, and there's not really anything else for me to learn about me. Those are kind of the things I'd be curious to hear your perspective on.
Yeah, well, one of the things she did for me, especially early on, was, you know, you have a story in your head of your childhood, right? But it's like, it's your interpretation of your childhood as you are now, right? Like, you know, you could have certain memories that are, you know, they probably happen exactly as you think, but most of your emotions actually keep evolving because you're really just replaying that thing in your head with new knowledge.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So one of the things, you know, one of the things I worked on was, like, say, the relationship with my dad, which I didn't have any trauma. Like, that's not, you know, like, I had a pretty normal childhood. And of course, once you dive into that, you realize there was some trauma. But I'll tell you, she had me go back to, so after, like, working on what my issues may have been, right, I had, like, this narrative in my head of my father or my family dynamic. And she actually asked me if I had any, like, home movies or pictures. And I said, yeah, like, my dad actually, he was a big movie, 8mm movie taker, and he had them all on DVD. And she wanted me to, like, as homework, like, go back and watch some of that. And I did. And it became, like, so much rich, like, information for that my psychotherapy, because it allowed me to, like, interpret even seeing it. Like, now there was no words back then, right? And, you know, it's a long time ago, so there was no, like, voice.
Yeah.
But I could see things that I interpreted very incorrectly when I actually see the dynamic. So we use the movies from my childhood to sort of make me understand what really happened, not what I was interpreting as happened.
Are you at liberty to use an example for what you're talking about? Like, viewing it and seeing it differently than maybe you remembered it?
Yeah, well, I'll go back to, like, my hip problem, right? So when I was born, I had to wear, like, this brace that made my hips, actually, they still use it, believe it or not, if kids are ever born with this, because it's hereditary to have, like, this hip dysplasia thing. Yeah. But none of my kids did. But anyway, you wear this brace, right, where your hips are out, your legs go out to the side, and it puts your, like, your socket in place, right? And it helps you be able to walk eventually. Like, you don't, you know, you won't have as many effects.
Right.
So I had this brace. I have movies. Now, I have to add a little bit. I have a sister that's 4 years older than me and a sister that's 5 years older than me. And, like, something we had to work on was, like, my family dynamic and my interpretation of the way my parents felt about my sisters versus me. Because I was, like, almost, if you think of the years apart, they were only 14 months apart, and they actually wound up in the same grade because my middle sister was so smart, she moved up a grade. I'm saying it like I actually feel about it, but anyway. but anyway, she's so smart, she moves up a grade, and then my sisters become basically like twins their whole life. They went to the same college and all this. So here I am, like, 4 years later, and in my mind, before my psychotherapy, I'm like a deformed, weak, not smart child that everybody had to take care of, and, like, I was special. Like, I'm totally, you know, watering this down for, like, making it fast, but, like, that's my childhood in my head, right? And I watch these movies, and, you know, I'm literally in this cast, right? And I'm, like, 8 months old, and I'm pulling myself up on a couch, like, and then I'm crawling with this really bad brace on, and I'm using my arms to do it, and, like, I look really strong, because what baby can pull, like, a 20-pound cast behind them? And she interpreted that. She helped me, like, reinterpret my view of myself as not so weak, right? And also, like, what I have overcome. And then my family's, like, the way they cared about me, right? And, like, my sisters were in the videos, right? I watched them, right? They took care of me. And they, you know, they did treat me special, which actually led to like some other things in my life. But like they, the fact that I came out strong and that it was, I was actually a strong baby. I wasn't weaker because of this. I was stronger because of it. I don't know if this is making sense to you, but it is.
I'm visualizing it. It's totally making sense to me.
Yeah. So she helped me reinterpret things from my childhood and past into like not a made up narrative, but the real narrative, right? Instead of the one that I cooked up in my head and lived with for a lot of years.
I think that's real. And I didn't think that's the direction that you were going to go. So do you get the sense that, I mean, at least for you, is it just sort of a misinterpretation of self? Like almost like one of the phrases that Nicole said in a podcast, you might have said it in a YouTube video, that I actually laughed out loud to, and I've repeated it a few times since I heard her say it. But it was basically, hey, if you have always seen yourself as a piece of shit, then guess what you are? You're living and you're a piece of shit. And I was like, yeah, God, that is the most Nicole thing I've ever heard.
Right.
But it really is true. Like if you're envisioning yourself as this weak, helpless child, then you probably were portraying that you were really a weak, helpless child, even if that wasn't the case. Is that kind of what one of the things that
exactly.
you learned? Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Like that I, you know, I just had such a misinterpretation that I was like the burden. You know, but no, I wasn't the burden, because even in these movies, like my dad was taking them specifically because he was so proud of me.
Yeah.
Like he was so proud of the fact that I could crawl across the floor with this thing and could stand. And then I'm like holding, you know, I'm my age or whatever, like maybe 9 months, 10 months, but I'm holding on to the couch and I'm standing up with this like horrible cast on with my legs out to the side. And like, I could do it like as a, you know, as this baby, yeah. I was having all this strength that I could actually do that. And my dad was probably taking the movies because he was so proud of me.
That's awesome.
You know, not because I was some, you know, defective child. Yeah. Right.
I love that. I love that story. Were there any certain things that, like for you, we've got a few more minutes, and one of the things I'm curious about is when your symptomatology started to get better and you were noticing a reduction in symptoms, was there anything beyond, you know, reframing and really belief that you were using in your toolkit for symptom relief? Maybe isn't the right term, but you know, some people will journal, some people, like I'm big in somatic, you know, somatic tracking, somatic experiencing. Was there anything in your particular toolkit that you found yourself going back and using because they were working well for you?
Well, I really do love journal speak. I think Nicole's brilliant. Because what happens now for me is like, if I'm feeling, I get that feeling in my body, you know, like, and I know that things are going on and I resist it. Like for 3 days will go by and I'll be like, you know, I really should journal. I really should journal every day. And then I'm, you know, and then I say, screw it. It's getting too bad. I really have to. So, and it feels so good. Like you feel different.
Yep.
Like it's actually so journal speak for sure, right? Because I actually can feel in my body the difference when I get done with that journal speak, you know, entry. And it, you know, it's no more of this 20 minutes and then 10 minutes of meditation. Like I'm not even there. I can write for 30 minutes because I need to, or 5 minutes because I need to. So I definitely use that. But the biggest tool, I think, for me, and I really do think for everybody, is just like acceptance. You know, like even, you know, when something does come up or I feel something, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, well, by the way, Eddie, go back to it is what it is.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
You stole my thunder. I was just about to say that. You stole my thunder.
It doesn't matter. Like, there's so much less fear when you can just accept that pain is there and it's there for a reason. And you may or may not figure out why, but it just is what it is. And then you don't even realize, but it's gone, you know, like at some point. And it could be a day, it could be an hour, and it could be 5 days. I don't care. It's okay, because it's just something is expressing itself through my body that needs to. And why would I shut that down?
Yeah. What was the reception of, because I'm quite sure that probably your relationships changed in some way, you know, friends and family and things like that, as you began feeling better and symptoms started going away. I know that just my overall level of lightness, if you will, and not even like the best description word, but just the way that I felt about day-to-day life really dramatically changed. What was kind of the reception with the people that were around you that saw, oh, we knew Barb in pain and now we know Barb not in pain? Like, what's the, talk a little bit about maybe how some of those dynamics changed or how that dynamic changed, if it did at all for you, and maybe it didn't.
Well, my closest relationship with my husband, I mean, he, you know, he was going to be supportive through this whole thing, no matter what. Mm-hmm. But I have to just say, though, like the learning that I did and then what he applies, he's an ultra runner, and what he has applied with, he calls it PMS, by the way, all the time. Every single time he calls it PMS. But anyway, whatever. I know what he's talking about now. But the learning that the learning that he's been able to apply to his ultra running and gotten him through, you know, his 100-mile races, because he knows that every pain he experiences is, even if it is physical, that he knows that he can overcome it. So I don't know if I'm answering exactly, but the knowledge I've been able to pass to my family, I don't know that they see me as different. Like, because, by the way, when I was in pain, you know, because of the personality that I am, all I did was try to hide it.
Yeah.
Like I did everything I could not to show my family. But they, you know, ultimately they knew I was, because I went on disability and things, but they see me, like, the biggest thing that's changed for me, Eddie, is that people come to me as a resource. Like, they want this. I know I called you the other day because I wanted someone that my son could relate to. He had back issues, and, you know, he came right to me looking for the knowledge because he knew I went through this. Yeah. Wasn't interested at the time, just knew I felt better. You know, that's all I cared about. So I really think my relationship changed, not so much like my life is like Nirvana and everything's wonderful and everybody's great, but it's more like I've become so confident in my knowledge of this and wanting to help others that I've become like a resource for people. I have somebody, I know we're running out of time, but like I have a friend who had fibromyalgia, she was at the Mayo Clinic. She was going to be going into a wheelchair. And Eddie, because I went through this at the same time that she did and gave her Sarno's book, she rides motorcycles now.
That's awesome.
Like, she's done. She's beyond it. And then I have another girl, my daughter's friend. She had pain all over her body. She was a veterinarian, or she is a veterinarian, and she just made the wrong sort of career choice. It's still within veterinary school, but I just worked with her like week after week, and she is moving. She's changing her careers. She's playing pickleball with her husband. She can't even, like, she's still at the point where she can't even believe her pain is gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, she cannot even believe it. And this is, you know, this is how my life has changed. I think I'm answering more for you, but this is what gives me so much like pleasure in life now.
That's terrific. Well, so what I want to close with, and this is really going to put you on the spot, but if you were to, because I'm ultimately going to ask for this regardless of whether it would be on film is the right word, tape, I guess we'll say on audio. If you were to, let's say, like, we're writing a book or we're telling a story or we're making a movie or whatever about your life and how it evolved over the last few years, like, what do we call it? And spoiler alert, this is what we're going to call the podcast episode. So it really is putting you on the spot. But like, what's the theme for you? Let me give you an example. So when I think about, let's say that I'm squatting or I'm doing anything, it could be just going for a hike or whatever. If I start to get my knee hurts or my back hurts or whatever, like, literally the first thought that crosses my mind is, this is a bunch of bullshit. Like, that would probably be what I would call my book, is this is a bunch of bullshit. Cause that's what I think, whenever that stuff pops up. So is there anything for you where, you know, a saying or a phrase or a thought or something like that rings in your head whenever you think about, you know, sort of the evolution of Barb over the last few years?
Yeah. Well, it maybe helped me shorten it, but I do have what it is, but I might not be able to say it succinctly yet. But what it is for me is, I don't do the bullshit. Like, I don't say this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, what I say to myself is, somewhere inside me, I'm trying to say something and I need to stop and listen. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know when I get a symptom, I know that I got to stop and listen and hear myself And as soon as I do that is when the symptom, you know, recedes.
Yep.
So I don't know how to say that succinctly, though.
Well, you can give it some thought and get back to me. But you've got about a week to think about it before this will air. So,
okay. Yeah, all right. Well, I'll try to say in a few words.
Barb, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was great. Several years in the making. I value your contribution, and I'm sure that a lot of people are valuing this as well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Well, can I say one thing?
Yes.
If you don't pay $8 a month for Eddie's podcast and you're listening to it for free all these years, I think you're nuts because the value that we get from you is just, you know, phenomenal that I don't know. I think everybody should pay $8 a month. So there you go.
I'd love it if everybody, because I get the stats on how many people listen. Trust me, there are tens of thousands of people that listen for free, which is fine. But you know, it is still helping keep the lights on. And there are certainly costs associated with it beyond the time. I was estimating that there's probably, if you take into account interview plus post-production time plus editing and then actually getting anything out, I'm somewhere probably between 300 to 400 hours of input on the show in the last 4 years, which is, you know, that's not nothing. That's a lot.
I know. It's a significant amount of your time and it's really quality stuff. And you've changed a lot over the 4 years I've watched you. But I just think, you know, if you can afford it, guys, I would consider, you know, Eddie doesn't have to do this and he doesn't have to continue. And I really want him to continue. So
yeah.
Just do something.
Yeah. Thank you. So patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Barb, thank you again so much. Hold on the line here for a second, but this will be the end of the interview. And again, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eddie.